Welcome to the Cacao Podcast. We are delighted today to have with us Carol Wills, who has been working in fair trade for the better part of 50 years and is known worldwide for the work that she has done and is doing. Carol, it is a delight to have you with us. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Can I ask you, did you get started in fair trade? Because that was really at the very beginning of the movement, wasn't it?
Yes, I guess it was. I had been working in Brussels and for the National Council of Social Welfare, now called the National Council of Voluntary Organizations, representing them there as we joined the EEC. But in 1976, I returned to London and was living in Putney at the time. And in Putney High Street, there was this wonderful shop, which I realise now was, I think, probably the first ever fair trade shop. It was called Project Hand, and it was run by an amazing person, a real visionary called Benny Dembitza. And I knew Benny slightly from a previous incarnation and got chatting to him. And he shortly afterwards became the director of FRIDA, the Fund for Research and Investment for the Development of Africa, which was run out of the Africa Centre in Covent Garden. And I did a bit of market research for them. And then I became their information officer for a few years. And we opened shops selling what we would now call fair trade crafts. We had one in Longacre, one in the Africa Centre itself. We even ventured overseas and opened one in Madrid and another one in Paris. And with Oxfam and Tearcraft, we started a newspaper, which I was the editor, called Tradecraft, but T-R-A-D-E Craft, for all involved in this very early movement of what then was called alternative trade, but of course what we now call fair trade. But the purpose of those shops and the work we did was to provide a market for small-scale producers, so often paid derisory amounts through their ignorance of what was going on in the market away from where they were living. I think that what we now call fair trade is really, really important because it does show that it's possible to do business in a way that benefits everyone in the chain. And, well, especially it's the work of the producers, the artisans in farmers, that must be properly rewarded so that their livelihoods are sustainable. So it became evident to me very early on that fair trade is all about human rights and trade justice.
And so when you were working with the Bridge Program, that was Oxfam's program, which was again importing handicrafts from producers, presumably producers they were working with, artisans they were working with in programs around the world?
That fitted our particular criteria. I mean, before I sort of took over the management of the program, I think maybe it was a mistake to become a manager, I don't know. My job was really finding those producers and working with them to discover their needs and what way Oxfam could actually help them with organisation, getting themselves organised to avoid exploitation, to make products that we could sell through our over 800 shops at the time. We had a wonderful designer called John Ballin, who used to spend weeks sometimes with producer groups that had been identified by people like me you know, is needing support. And we were then able to import the products and sell them through our shops, and our catalogue, of course. So it was much more than just a trading relationship. It was a development relationship.
And that's at the core of fair trade, isn't it? That it is all about relationships, and they are relationships which are not simply transactional, but really do have the development, in a sense, on both sides, awareness of justice on the one primarily, and sort of building markets and awareness of the markets for the other.
Yes, there are such huge benefits from fair trade. And of course, I went on from Oxfam after many years to run what is now called the World Fair Trade Organization. Immediately, it was called IFAT, the International Federation for Alternative Trade. And I actually ran that out of Oxfam for 7 years. But it's the building of community, the opportunities to share, you know, learning and experiences and information, and then how to organize themselves democratically. I feel that's so important. But perhaps the most important of all, bearing in mind that so many producers, artisans and farmers are women, the empowerment of women, the learning of information that could help them take themselves forward in very dramatic ways. I mean, there are so many examples that can be mentioned from around the world. You know, for example, last week I had the director of Sasha from Kolkata staying here, Rupa Mehta, and we've been friends for over 40 years. But they have, for example, their Artisans Association, which bring together self-organizing groups of women, both from rural and urban areas, in this big association, 30, 40, 50 groups, you know, where they can learn from each other, pick up new skills, and you know, make high quality products which can be sold through Sasha's market contacts.
If you could talk about one or two people who have truly inspired you that you've met as part of your work with the World Fair Trade Organization, who would those be?
There are just so many. Gosh, there are so many. There are the leaders, of course, of the fair trade exporting marketing organizations. But really, it's the women and men at the village or urban group level who are so inspiring. There's a woman called, thinking of Uganda again, remember a woman called Jennifer, who was a small-scale coffee farmer. She had some bushes. She belonged to a group. But as she learnt more about the outside world, she was absolutely determined that she was going to get herself elected onto the local council so that she could, you know, change something more than in her immediate surroundings. But when I visited her once in what would seem to us from here to be a very simple mud house with a thatched roof, she was cooking a big pot of beans, and an elderly man who looked in a very bad way sort of pottered past leaning on his stick, and he was invited in to eat. That's just one. I remember a family the family belonging to Parvati. But I remember being invited into their home. The hospitality of so many producers has been phenomenal. But there was a very elderly cow in the family that had served the family for many years, providing milk that could be turned into yogurt and so on. Anyway, the cow had reached an age where she no longer produced milk. But instead of sending her off to wherever old cows are sent, the family had decided that they would keep that cow as a sort of pet. She had served them so well. This is slightly off fair trade, I suppose, but it perhaps indicates an attitude. You know, they would keep her for the rest of her life because she'd served them so well. But Parvati herself was an amazing leader of a group.
When you talk about that, you remind me actually, and I think it is indicative of a mindset. When I was in Dominica, I was interviewing one of the largest fair trade farmers on the island, somebody who employed a number of other people. And we were talking about the different fair trade standards, including the fact that he as a farmer was required to pay people a decent wage. And he said, well, you know, that's in effect, that's not a problem, because of course you do, because, you know, they have families too.
Yes.
And the concept that this would be an imposition was not something he could even conceive. Which is something I think we can all learn from.
Yes. Now, I have met some amazing people who across the world, at every level in fair trade, who are deeply committed to human rights and justice, for all, and know that unless everybody in the chain can be dealt with fairly and properly and paid properly and on time, the system really doesn't work. And who want to see their locality, their countries develop in ways that are good for all.
What message would you most want to leave with people in the UK about fair trade?
Well, that it is worthwhile fighting for, so buy fair trade, join a fair trade group, start a fair trade group, you know, have a fair trade stall at the back of your church on a Sunday morning, lend money to producers, farmers, via shared interest. You can always get your money back because you're making a loan. And if you're somebody who prays, you know, meditate on the situation of artisans and farmers in faraway places and think about what it might mean to be poor, very poor, and ask God to help everyone to move from position of poverty and uncertainty to security. And while you're praying, pray for our leaders to have wisdom and understanding as they look to overcome poverty in their nations. And pray for hope and justice for all.
Thank you, Carol. I am so grateful.
Thank you.